I have time, right?
Yep.
Roll call, please.
Dan Moore.
Here.
Yvette Itu.
Here.
Bruce Rinker.
Here.
Three members are present, which constitutes a quorum.
The Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Motion for the minutes.
Move to approve the minutes from November 21st.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Financial report, please.
Thank you, Commissioner Moore. David set up our PowerPoint, and we'll walk through the first 11 months. As you know, we're through almost through the full fiscal year, so we're getting close. We'll get an idea of where we stand. Here we go. So at a high level, I've highlighted the revenue on property tax. We've talked about this a number of times over the last couple months. We're pretty well through the year. We're 0.7% above the prior year in terms of collections. We're using about a 1% growth factor in revenue for next year in the budget, as we've talked about, and we'll talk about the budget later. I did highlight charges for services. That's up 14.8%. And charges for services are up across the park district. They're up at the zoo, they're up in golf, and they're up at the various enterprise operations. And we'll go through that in detail as we go through the rest of the presentation. I did want to point out, if you look at expenses, total operating expenses are up just about 10%. Which is right in line with what we budgeted based upon getting back to full staffing, inflation, and other increases in costs, as well as expanded operations like the addition of Ironwood. 10% is right in line with what we had budgeted. The zoo, one of the highlights you can see right on the top line, their admissions revenue is up 12.9%, let's call it 13%, which is excellent. And total revenues for the year are up 8%. When you look at expenses, total expenses for the year up 7.3%. It's a great recipe for success. You can see the subsidy is in line with the previous year, but if you look at it on a percentage basis, last year the subsidy was 28.9% at this time. This year it's at 28.4%. It's operating 0.5% better through 11 months of 2024 than it was 2023. Overall, the zoo is doing exceptionally well. You'll hear about some of the capital projects that are coming on and have been done. And all of them have been done well within budget and on time. And I think everything at the zoo right now is going very, very well. When you look at golf, you'll see total revenue greens fees is up 15.9%. In October, that was 15.8, so we're tracking pretty well. We always have to balance that with we're including Ironwood. So the rounds played are up 9% this year when you back out Ironwood. So if we suggest that revenue's up 15.9%, roughly 16%, about 7% of that is Ironwood. But the true growth is about 9% organically grown within the courses that we have. The one thing you'll note down here in operations, this is we're up $800,000 in operating expenses. That might catch your attention as you went through. Over 300,000 of that was related to Ironwood. Ironwood was not there last year. It is there this year. Excuse me. A couple of the other courses that are up a little bit more. Operating expenses are up at Sleepy, 102, up at Seneca, 105. All the other courses average around $40,000 to $50,000 year-over-year increase, which is right in line with inflation and other costs. All in all, we're very pleased. You can see the operating surplus in golf through the first 11 months is over $4 million. That's almost a $455,000 increase over the previous year through 11 months. Again, bearing in mind that this includes Ironwood. The one course I did want to highlight and the best performer of the year so far through 11 months would be Big Met, and their net operating surplus or revenue is 38.86% higher this year than it was last year. Year over year through 11 months.
Can I ask why that is? I mean, what is unique about Big Men? Is it just its size?
Its size and just the amount of play. It's an excellent golf course and it's busy all the time. The amount of play is just excellent. Mm-hmm. It's well run and the volume. I don't know how much more we can squeeze out of there because there's just only so many days and a lot of it's weather too. We've had good weather this year.
Food services definitely helped at that particular location, and I'd also, you know, under Brian Van Loan and the entire team across the golf courses, revenue from food and beverage has done much better, and then all of the wearables and the pro shops have done extremely well. To Wade's point, I think we're to the point where, you know, we're running every available tee time that's possible, and Big Met probably is one of the most played golf courses in the state of Ohio.
Fantastic.
We look at enterprise. You can see enterprise, the year-to-date total revenue's up $481,000. I did want to point out, you'll see dock revenue right here, $865,000. We did a little dive this month because I thought there might be some questions. $743,000 of the dock revenue hits East 55th, and about $120,000 hits the Emerald Necklace Marina. But you can see the dock revenues are up year-over-year, $162,000. And now all the annual renewals are in. You can see last year they happened in November. You'll remember last month we had a big number in October. So they've smoothed out now, and we're up $162,000 in dock revenues, which is a big driver to the $480,000.
What do we get out of the one at Edgewater and the one at Wendy Park, those two marinas?
When you say what do we get out of in terms of dock revenues or total revenues?
In terms of just total revenues from the concessionaire.
I would have to follow up on that, Commissioner. I don't know right off the top of my head how much we get from the concessionaire. And then I did want to point out, I'm sorry, Commissioner, is it bumped forward? There's the East 55th Marina. You can see it's up over $100,000 year over year. That's actually a 24.9% increase. As I mentioned, a lot of that is driven by the dock revenue. East 55th, the restaurant, is just doing extremely well. It's up, it's a goofy percentage because this is so low. It's up 256%. And you can see that's the product of managing expenses and revenues being up. So those were two of our stronger performers on the enterprise side, but most performed extremely well. Some did not perform as well because they were either shut down or something like Merwin's, which we've talked about, is kind of level. They're right about where they were last year at this time. The other thing I did want to point out, and we've talked about this a few times, I didn't highlight it, but you can see the difference in Huntington, just the difference in net revenue from $92,000 to $155,000, based upon the improvements that we've made, driving more activity there, which is driving revenue. So you can see the residual effect of when we invest in parks and areas, reservations, et cetera, what it does to the top line. And then the last slide we have is the nature shops. And again, this is a repeat, but it bears repeating. This again is down due to Hinckley being closed. Hinckley was worth $200,000 to $300,000 a year in gross revenue. So the fact that they've been able to close that gap to $80,000 is excellent. Again, e-commerce is up, website sales and others are helping fill that gap. Once Hinckley gets open, you'll see this number just balloon, go right up through the roof. But right now we're struggling just because Hinckley's been closed. And that's all I have through 11 months, Commissioners. We're in a very good spot. You'll get a full year-over-year comparison in January when we have the full calendar year 2024 results.
Excellent report, thank you. Brian.
Very good. The very first action item we have for the last meeting in December is the 2024 budget adjustment number 12. Wade.
Thank you, Brian. Commissioners, on page 9, you'll see budget adjustment number 12 in the amount of $802,666. The detail for that adjustment is on pages 48 through 50. I would point out that there is a $500,000 adjustment. It's an increase in capital contracts. It's for the old Lorain Connector Trail, and that's for $500,000 that we received from the Cleveland Clinic. So $500,000 of that adjustment is Cleveland Clinic money. I would ask your approval of budget adjustment 12.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
The next one is authorization to revise change in petty cash. This is something we do periodically throughout the year. As people move around throughout the park district, we just make sure we have the proper assignment for who's responsible. The recommended action falls on the bottom portion, keeps going, of page 14.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Next is the 2025 appropriations budget. Wade.
Thank you, Brian. Commissioners, you'll see on page 15, the appropriations budget for 2025. The new spending authorization totals $202,544,581. It's detailed on the column that says new spending authorization. You also see the reauthorization of unspent monies that were authorized this year and in prior years for various capital projects, as well as the carryover encumbrances for the total budget of $281,699,585.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
The next is single source surplus declarations, auction approvals. It's got an A, B, and C. We have successfully worked over the last decade plus to be able to maximize the amount of sale of surplus equipment through GovDeals. We also are asking for permission to do a live auction periodically when we have a number of vehicles that need to get sent out. Sometimes a live auction is the best option for us as well. And then purchase of used vehicles, which we have done, as a few of the commissioners will know, a number of years back we were buying from clearinghouses of vehicles to buy down the age of our fleet in order to get it kind of rebalanced again. So it allows us to buy golf equipment that may be on an auction. It may be a truck. It may be a lift boom truck, maybe a wide variety of different things, but allows us the flexibility to purchase used vehicles if needed. Recommended action falls through the bottom page of 17.
Move to approve.
Quick question on the auction items. Were there any acquired in 2024?
Actual equipment purchase? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dave Donner, we just were talking on the way in this morning, periodically by fairway mowers, 4700Ds, four-wheel drive, et cetera. So yes, we definitely do use the used market. In fact, we're scanning right now for a couple pieces. So turf equipment is extremely expensive. That's just one example.
Brian, one other question. Is government deals the best one?
Jim's here. I mean, Jim, you want to come up? This has been something we literally look at every single year. What is our best option and our best value to sell used equipment?
So GovDeals, good morning. So GovDeals is,
Jim.
Good morning, thank you. Just getting right into it. GovDeals is geared towards government agencies. And we found that prior to COVID, we had limited success on GovDeals. So we would do the live auction. Once COVID came, a live auction was not really an option for a little bit there, but GovDeals really ramped up. So now we just kind of watch the market on GovDeals, and we make the decision in the fall, do we want to just stick with GovDeals, or do we want to put all of our vehicles together and have a live auction? And to date, the last 5 years, we have not gone the route of the live auction. And just to give you a little bit of insight, last year we were able to generate $260,000 in online auction of our surplus items that we're spending, and then we take that money and roll it right back into our fleet acquisitions for the following.
And in government deals, do you have the opportunity to get a military equipment as well? I mean, trucks and that sort of stuff?
So we do. So if they are advertising as surplus items, you can also go a separate route and deal directly with the armed forces if you wanted to go military as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks. Sorry, interrupted. I'll second the motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
We want a bazooka?
Yes. Are we buying military gear?
Well,
we can just move on. You don't have to answer the question.
Yeah, don't answer that question.
Actually, it's a pretty good deal.
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah. Very good. I will keep moving. The next action item is the Institute of Museum and Library Services. This is Euclid Beach STEM Adventure Camp authorization to submit a grant and commit funds. Mary, I'm going to have come up real quick because this is our first. And so this is a very big deal for the Metro Parks. These are arguably some of the most competitive grants in the country.
Great. Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Brian. We're really excited. This grant from the Institute for Museum and Library Services is really kind of one of the premier grants. And what we're going to do with this, it's a three-year grant that's going to help us continue and grow the outreach that we've been doing up out of Euclid Beach. You may recall, I think I've been before the board before, for the last three summers, we've run an off-site camp there at the marina, offered free of charge in partnership with the Greater Cleveland Food Bank. This will allow us to expand not only the camp and continue that going, but it will also allow us to offer year-round STEM-related programs. So we're looking at after-school programs, programs on the weekend, family, standards-based, all of that. So we're really excited. This is a great step forward with our BARS 225 coming online here in the next few years.
Congrats. And to the entire grant team that helped write this, this is a one-of-a-kind. Recommended action falls on the bottom portion of page 18 into 19.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is Andy and Bear Conservation Alliance Contract Amendment. This is something that we've been with for a wide variety of years. Senior Advisor Kim Gopp is on staff here. We continue to work with this in Colombia, Ecuador, Peru, and Bolivia. It's one of our premier conservation programs. And this is just basically assigning the senior advisor position generated through the Cleveland Zoological Funds along the way. Recommended action falls on the bottom portion of page 19 to enter into the contract renewal.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next action item we have is the operating agreement between Cleveland Metro Parks and the Cleveland Zoological Society. Rose, I'll just have you highlight just a couple of the quick things. And we did do a cleanup, and Sarah Krupe is here as well, the executive director.
Thank you, Brian. Yes, this comprehensive drafting of the operating agreement comes with the collaboration of Brian and Chris and Sarah. You know, historically, the agreement between the Cleveland Metro Parks and the Zoo Society was pretty bare bones. And so what we thought it was time to really just take that comprehensive view of all the issues that the two agencies deal with and include it in this comprehensive operating agreement. And so what it covers are the programs that the Zoo Society assists us with and performs, including the membership program, the donor program, and the conservation program. In addition, we spell out the revenue share regarding the membership fees from the zoo and how those are split, which resembles the same financial terms that has existed for the last several years. The term, we also, you know, on an annual basis, we come back to you. But as Chris and Sarah and Brian discussed, really, we don't have to come back every year to the board, but we'll come back when there's substantial changes. So either party, as there's discussion, continuing discussion, we will notify the other party if we feel like we want to make a substantial change to the contract, and then we would come back to the board to get that change approved. So we're going to have an ongoing automatic renewal agreement unless we feel that we need to make a significant change to come back and get that approved by the board. We discuss and outline the facility arrangement and also, importantly, the data ownership. We discuss who owns what property as far as the membership list versus the donor list that is cultivated by the Zoo Society. And also we cover the confidentiality provisions that are required and also the intellectual property. So we do allow the Zoo Society to use our registered marks and we issue a license through this operating agreement for the limited purposes. And then we include just all of the, you know, rudimentary legal terms and conditions regarding termination amendment, insurance, and those sorts of things. Any questions about that? Thank you.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is construction manager at risk for Cleveland Metro Parks Gordon Park Improvements Lakefront Reservation. This is a project that started with the Jack Joseph and Morton Mandel gift. Cleveland Metro Parks and team have been working diligent with the community to come up with a comprehensive plan. As part of that, we needed to bring on our construction manager at risk firm. They've gone through an extensive four-party interview process. They have worked to negotiate with Next Generation Construction, Northeast Ohio company founded in 2009, rooted right into the exact neighborhood that we'll be working. We find that they are the highest and best for the services that we are looking for the next phases of Gordon Park South's redo. Recommended action falls on the bottom mid-portion of page 23.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is the contract manager at risk for the Old Lorraine Connector. This is in the Rocky River Reservation. Part of this work dates back to 2023 and arguably a lot longer than that. This has been a longstanding project, how to create access down the Old Lorraine Road area. Metro Parks has worked diligently with Cam's Corner, West Park area for the American Rescue Plan Act grant from the Cuyahoga County District 2. a host of funding that includes Cleveland Clinic to actually bring a trail down from the top of Lorraine safely through the area to end right near the Mastic Woods Golf Course. We have a project scope, and we have a contractor that we're set to move forward with. Recommended action falls on the top portion of page 25 to enter into the construction manager risk with Neroni and Sons. We've done a tremendous amount of work for the Metro Parks, including most recently Garfield Park.
I have to abstain here.
Move to approve.
Can I second and then ask a question just to keep in order?
Yes.
just curious. Has the design been done for this? You mentioned that it was a challenge to get the design done. So the design has been done. We know how it's going to mm-hmm. flow down to,
yes.
to yep. Little Mitt.
Do we have a map, Sean?
Yes. Look at you guys are really prepared.
So just a little bit of quick background on here, and then we can jump to the map. As Brian talked about, we've been working, in fact, really back to 1915 on how to get down to the valley here. The actual visit from Frederick Law Olmsted Jr. was chronicled here in how to achieve access.
100 years later.
Yes. bear with me here.
Can you did you turn it on, Sean?
It's definitely on.
All right.
Yeah. Thank you. So this gives you an aerial of the area. Commissioner Ritu, this is a color site plan of how access will be achieved, working on an easement with the Cleveland Clinic on property that they own. Then we hop onto Cleveland Metro Parks property here. And it's rather steep, but we are really flattening the trail as much as possible. So that we can provide access for all. We are working on some specific plans up at the trailhead on River Edge Drive. So here we'll be doing landscaping. Here we go. Specific landscaping and specific trailhead treatments. We have worked with Cam's Corner and with the neighborhood so that this is an attractive entrance and can provide a great gateway to the connector trail. So specifically, it was mentioned in Wade's financial report that Cleveland Clinic has provided $500,000 of funding. That is money now in the bank. $750,000 is coming from the county through Cam's Corner. The city of Cleveland is also providing $750,000. So that's $2 million right there. Design is nearing completion. Permitting is underway. And what's before you today is the tree clearing package for this upcoming winter. And then we'll start construction in earnest. In the spring. So specifically when it comes to tree clearing, again, and this is a topographic map, you can tell that we really have to adjust the hillside here in order to achieve slope compliance on the trail. Wow. So we will be removing some trees and then restoring those areas, and that is what the GMP includes today, which is in front of you. So here's the areas that we'll be doing the work, and happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you.
Vicious.
It's one of those projects that if you wait long enough, it will become true.
Yeah.
Holy good to
cow.
See.
There was a first and a second, and Dan Moore did abstain. The all next.
So we're done.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. The next contract amendment is design builder for Cleveland Metro Parks Solon to Chagrin Falls Trail. We'll pull up a quick one. Sean, you might as well come back. Continue on, again, with the work that we're doing in Solon to continue to bring the work together through a wide variety of different areas, including the village of Bentleyville.
Yes. Thank you, Brian. We've got a presentation here for you as well. We have been working with the city of Solon for quite some time on this project, and a lot of progress has been made. What's in front of you today is actually a request to fund the design of the next phase, but we'll give you a little bit of background on the construction that's happened to date and the bridge work that's going to be occurring here. So in working with Neroni and Sons, who is our contractor, phase one, which is the yellow highlighted portion here, we've been under construction for a few months. You can see some of the progress here. We've got three bridges that are going to be constructed in this phase and one culvert. Our bridge superstructures and abutments are done. Most of our
Trail prep is done, and we'll do all the stoning in the spring, with paving as well. So we're on budget, we're on schedule, and we've had some challenging work, because this is a tough project. It's an old railroad line, so the access can really only be achieved by a few points. And Neroni's done a really good job of both keeping the site clean and access, and also working with the neighbors. So then phase two. The agreement that we have with the city of Solon says that within a year of completion of phase one, we will come in and do phase two. So in working with Jim Rodstrom and his crews, we're working through design, we're working to figure out how we can build this bridge. What we're looking at is 260-foot span, total span, to achieve getting over the floodplain of the Chagrin River. We've had some experience with this. Jim and his work over at Welsh Woods on that Eastern Ledge Trail, we've figured out how to build these bridges both in a combination of truss, and then in this one specifically it'll be truss, it'll be boardwalk, and then we'll add some towers to appear as if it is a suspension bridge. So here's kind of an engineering document that we're working through right now. But what's in front of you today is amendment to the contract to not only design the bridge, but permit the bridge, because we are in the state scenic river, and there's a lot of work that we need to do to prepare for construction starting in 26.
Sean, is the floodplain that wide?
It is. This is a very wide floodplain in this portion.
We've walked it when it's been uniquely wet. So, yeah, we need to stay out of it.
Great. Thank you.
Any further questions?
No. Move
to. One question. The bridge, if we bought this sort of a semi-standard bridge that they adapt, is this the same one that we used on the Euclid?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's a slick-looking bridge.
It is. And working with Jim, we're actually looking to combine two different bridge types kind of seamlessly just on this one project.
Good job.
Yeah, thanks.
Nice. Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
The next is Cleveland Metro Parks Hinkley Lake Dam Modifications, guaranteed maximum price number 3. Sean, do you have a presentation for this one too?
Okay. Don't go away.
The Sean day.
Do you want me to jump right in,
Brian?
Yes,
please.
Okay. On Hinkley, we have been doing great work with Great Lakes Construction. They have been really working through some challenges. With the summer, we actually had a very, very good summer for dam construction, if you will. So I want to walk you through some of the progress here before we get to the dredging component, which is before you. So September 18th, 2023, we started to draw down the lake. You can see in the picture from the left the berms of the lake and the shoreline starting to show as that lake was drawn down. By March of 24, more than well underway. What I want to show you in the July picture here in the lower right-hand corner is we actually set up a series of 4 siphons, and that was the cheapest, most creative way we found to keep the lake drained. There were a few times right after we initially drained the lake that it still came back and overtopped the dam, but then we really learned how everything worked, and we've been working in the dry now for many months without the dam overtopping. So Great Lakes has done a fantastic job in working through that process. We've got most of the spillway work done, if not all the spillway work. We are now progressing. These pictures were taken just 2 days ago. We're now working on the Lowhead Dam. So this is the dam that actually creates the swim area, that creates that stilling basin. So we've really progressed well. What you can see here is we're still piping water through the site. This is the outlet. And again, we've done a really good job of managing the lake elevations so that it doesn't overtop the site. In addition to the work on the spillway, we've also been working on the embankment. So we've brought in 15,000 cubic yards of clay. That clay was mined, if you will, from the Buzzard's Roost site, which is just off the page to the left here. And we'll talk about what we're going to do with the dredge material. So we've raised that embankment. So now we're up to current standards with that height. And this is a more current picture, if you can see the work on the eastern embankment, and then work on the western embankment is just about complete now to date. So this is a picture looking north, and this picture was taken this fall, and it is what happens when you just let nature take its course. So the lake has actually reseeded, if you will. And what we see is collections of grasses. But what it also shows is the amount of siltation that has occurred over the years. So what we're going to be doing now with this GMP that's in front of you is really concentrating on the dredging of the lake. So dredging this southern portion of the lake by the boathouse. This is where we know we've got some challenges with watercraft, and we're going to concentrate the work right here. This is rather technical, but what we're doing now is we're actually investing in the future. We're going to be building a haul road in the lake with a series of fingers so that in the future we can come back and actually reuse them. We're spending some money now to help us save a lot of money later. One of the two main aspects of this is we have two forebays, and these forebays are actually an investment as well. Well, we will dig bigger pits in the lake, and that is where Johnson's Creek outlets right here, and this is where the eastern branch of the Rocky River outlets. So we're hoping that the silt then deposits there, so in the future we can mark these, come back, and concentrate our dredging efforts and removal efforts on the forebays. We will be taking the dredge material to Buzzard's Roost. We will fill that area where we mine the clay, and then we will expand it. We'll have a decanting area, and then we'll also have the possibility for some topsoil. So with that, I want to say that the most complicated thing is actually not standing in front of you, but last Saturday we gave a presentation to the Highland Girl Scout troop, and they were amazed. So it was, they really were. It was a great day. So I'm happy to answer any questions.
I had a broad question. $11 million is a heck of a lot of money, and it was going to be a lot more than that, you know, before you got into the refinements here. There must be other dams in the state of Ohio that have the same problem. And I'm sort of amazed that there isn't some sort of a subsidy that the state provides for.
We hammered at that for years, and we agree. Not only is there no state subsidy, there's no federal subsidy. Every penny going in this is Metro Parks dollars. And to do what we've done on a class one dam, I put us up against any of our peers. For $11 million, we are getting a heck of a lot of work done.
Yeah. But now what happens if a dam is owned by a township or something like that? Or that doesn't happen?
It does.
Well, it does happen.
Yeah, and you don't see the maintenance. And that's why we're in the state we are with class one dams and the critical infrastructure.
Yeah.
I think it's unique, this board, you know, it was designed to last about 100 years, and I think we're in our 98th year. And so when you look at insurance and the process that we've taken to get here, we tried to turn over every absolute funding stone, every earmark, every opportunity, FEMA emergency management plans. We did everything possible to find funds, and this was one of the few that in recent years that we did not find any, and we knew that it was our responsibility. It was something that the board many, many years ago created, and we've now taken care of it. So, you know, when people say that, you know, yes, we do build new things, but we also do very much take care of our critical infrastructure. This happens to be one of the most critical pieces of large infrastructure. And again, I think when we look at our capital stack, we brought a lot of money forward to make sure we could take care of this. We're going to dredge with the money that we have, and if we need to come back, then we'll do it, and we're setting it up for success in the future.
To be able to pull resources from our own property, clay, and then refill, that's very clever.
Yeah.
I give the team a ton of credit, our GIS, our drone mapping, one of our interns did a tremendous job with that, and then Great Lakes Construction. You know, they've been on board with us greater than, I think, 5 years.
Since 2016.
Yeah, so they've been with us the entire time to make sure that we could do this the absolute right way, the most efficient way, and the most cost-effective way.
Very good, thanks.
Recommended action falls on the bottom portion of page 29.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is an approval of an LPA, Local Project Administration, LET project. This is for the Garfield Park Bridge replacement. This is just enclosing Mill Creek. We have partnered with a number of different agencies over time. This is a unique portion that we will actually work to be responsible for, about 423 feet. We are partnering again with the county and with ODOT along the way. The recommended action to enter into the LPA agreement with ODOT falls on the bottom portion of page 31.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The award of tabulation and bids falls on the top portion of page 33, concrete learning system, paid media, and Seneca Golf Range and Pools. This is part of the last phase, phase number four, and to work on the nets at the Washington Park Golf Course.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Vouchers and payroll, Wade.
Thank you, Brian. Commissioners, on page 42, you'll see resolution 24-12-164 in the amount of $14,088,288.23. All of these vouchers have been reviewed as to their legality, and they conform with the Ohio Revised Code, and I would ask your approval.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Commissioners, on page 43, you'll see resolution 24-12-165 in the amount of $176.25. These are vouchers to Arborware. They've been reviewed as to legality, and they also conform with the Ohio Revised Code. I would ask your approval.
I'll pass on this.
You'll abstain. Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Public comments.
Marty.
Good morning. If you're within one position of full police staffing, then why is it so rare to see an officer? There were two recent serious incidents where loose dogs spooked horses, with riders being thrown and injured. Loose dogs are something I've repeatedly complained about. My own horse was literally attacked, not merely chased, years back by an off-leash dog, to the surprise of the owner. With extensive purchases of cameras for lakefront locations, why can't some of the personnel come back to patrol the original reservations at the old staffing levels? Back when we saw our officers frequently. Increased coverage would assure officers could see the loose dogs and cite their owners. If I recall correctly, the owner must be cited and face court for the dog to be declared dangerous, defined as warranted if it has caused injury to any person. In November, this happened twice just in Rocky River Reservation. Walkers and runners are also at risk. Inform and enforce. Otherwise, the message is that Lewis Road or Memorial Field or the bridle paths are loose dog destinations. Believe me, that is widely shared. Riders who searched your Facebook page found no mention of the accidents and observed that Metro Parks lacks a police Facebook page. Most cities have one, separate from their main Facebook page. Those local entities have a fraction of Metro Parks' resources. The zoo has its own page. A police page could include info items like events, roads, ford closures, reminders of regulations, and even warnings of areas with problems. It would show your desire to keep the public informed. Trying to pretend that nothing bad happens in Cleveland Metro Parks is not only unrealistic, it is a disservice. Metro Parks rules should also be clearly posted so no one can claim ignorance. Lorain Metro Parks signs state dogs must be on a 6-foot handheld leash. Cleveland Metro Parks signs say, be safe, leash your pet. As though an owner might mistakenly think their dog is not a problem when running loose or dragging a 50-foot rope. The best way to ensure good publicity is to prevent bad things happening. There used to be an annual ranger and police reports summarizing incidents with outcomes for the year and introducing the special units. Good PR. A well-done presentation can add as much to the professional image as calling them police and painting that on vehicles. With so much expertise and software available in-house, it should be easy to compile. Unless, of course, the aim is to keep things quiet. Thank you.
Chief, how many horse dog incidents do we have a year in round numbers?
You have to come up, Chief. He's talking to you, Chief Stillman.
The question was, how many horse dog incidents do we have? And in those cases, how many of the dogs are already on leashes?
I don't have the data exactly how many horse versus dog incidents, but I can tell you that the police department, as well as the Cleveland Mounted Parks organization, is extremely empathetic to this issue. With 19.1 million visitors that came to the Metro Parks last year, we have to understand that we just can't be everywhere at that time. When I got here in 22, my mantra was very proactive law enforcement. And with the amount of work that our prosecutor, Marisa Marinella, has on her desk, that proves that my officers are doing what I want. Again, discretion does come into play. I travel Valley Parkway throughout the reservations many times, and when I do see a dog off leash, which really isn't a common occurrence, but when I do see them, I will get out and inform them and, you know, just let them know we log it. And if the person is run through again and it's shown that they have a prior run-in with a warning, then a citation is issued. But we do issue citations. Most recently, our mounted unit went to an area where one of these incidents happened and issued a couple tickets themselves. So we are doing everything we can as an organization, and we will continue to do that. It's just unfortunate, and the problem is not going to go away, that with 19.1 million visitors, a lot of people are dog lovers, animal lovers, myself included. I've brought my dogs down there, my cats. They're always on leash, but people come to enjoy and do it within a, you know, a pretty legitimate way. Unfortunately, those that don't, by the time somebody calls and we get there, they may be gone. We always try to tell people to get a license plate number. We will follow up, give them a personal call, and let them know, hey, I mean, education is paramount. So we're doing everything we can do, and we'll continue to do.
Now, how about vicious dogs on leashes?
We really don't have, there's maybe, this year I can think of maybe one or two where a dog attacked another dog, but none have been labeled vicious, you know, by Ohio law. There is a process and a procedure to go through that we have not done that.
Yeah, well, thank you. And thanks for what you do.
We're very well of the problem, commissioners, and we will continue to do everything we can to combat it and make sure that everybody that comes down to recreate does so in, you know, a lawful manner.
Yeah, this incident back in 2007 is sort of a scary story. But I know that you can't be everywhere.
No, we try to be.
Yeah.
And we do the best we can. And my officers know that when they're out there, they're supposed to be enforcing the laws. And if a citation is warranted, they issue them.
Mike, you do an amazing job.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Hello, my name is Norm Plansky. I'm owner of Major Hooples down on Franklin Road in Columbus in the flats next to your Irish Town Bend project. Been there for 44 years, and I'm probably the business that's most affected during this construction process. I came today because I saw that it's on the agenda that you're going to give an update. I'm hoping that you have considered removing the Franklin bike path that took away parking spots that really will serve no purpose when the new park is built. Or even better, that you're going to keep the parking lot that's there, which would be at the head of three trails. And again, we offer to help keep that parking lot clean and safe for everybody to use, which would be beneficial to the public to enjoy the park and help out our business. I do believe you're just going to put three bike paths running parallel to each other in that small area, which I don't understand. Also here to let you know, during the construction process, there has been some miscommunications and incidences that have probably delayed your project, because I've dealt with issues in the past. When you guys built the Red Line Greenway, there was issues of flooding and mudslides that damaged my property. And with this project, we have had power outages, water main busting that have caused us to close down. Right now, there's a water leak that has popped out of the road that during this time of year will freeze the road, and it goes down to your entrance of the crosswalk and the bike path, so you have a nice little slick path of ice. Also, we had the gas lines being replaced to redo the infrastructure where they put holes in the street and couldn't put it there, then put holes in the sidewalk next to the building, couldn't put it there. Then they got it underneath your bike path where the parking spots would be nice to be back. And when they were almost done, stop work order was placed by you guys on them that did not get them to finish the job until November. So this whole summer I've dealt with dirt, loose rocks on the sidewalk, or a giant hole right in front of our front door where if you took two steps off our front steps, you would fall into a hole that was just weather mesh netting was placed. So as the project gets closer to my business, which is a 135-year-old building, which makes it one of the oldest taverns in Cleveland, I hope that more precautions are taken. I did mention this to the construction company, and after that, they put sensors on my building to measure if it's slipping and put a seismic reader right next to my building to see if they will be held responsible for the damages that come. So please don't destroy my building. And if we can have more parking, it would be beneficial to the public and to my business. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to put this on the record.
Thank you.
Just as a point of clarification, Cleveland Metro Parks is under no contract with any entity currently building on the hillside.
Yes, I know that.
Just clarifying.
You make all the decisions for them. And when you built your thing, you did flood and damage my property.
And we took care of it, Norm.
Yes, you followed the code for you.
Yes.
Good morning. I'm Candy King. I'm a resident over in North Royalton. You have the luxury of living across from the bridle trails of Millstream Run and Brecksville. I'm also president of OHC, the Ohio Horsemen's Council here in Cuyahoga County. I'm one of the people that do get calls on a regular basis when there are incidents, or I get message on Facebook for these incidents that happen with horse versus dogs. I was actually on the phone with November 25th with Nancy, who is the one woman that was injured and was spending now 8 weeks in a wheelchair due to a broken femur, when I was getting texted that there was another incident happening at Lewis Road with the three riders up there. One was being taken out by ambulance.
Was Nancy the one I mentioned in this letter?
She probably sent you a letter.
Okay.
Yep. And I actually, we agreed not to have it read or anything, but just wanted to make sure you were aware. But the biggest thing is on December 8th, I too was over in Rocky River because I have a couple horse trailers and able to go and enjoy all of the smart metro parks. I encountered a man on the trail who absolutely refused to move and let me have egress to the north side, and was adamant that he was not going to leash his dog. He did not need to leash his dog. I did call emergency number. They did send a couple of police over. But at that time, the man had already walked away, and I was fortunate enough that I was on my old horse that is very calm. I was able to stand at the side of the road. I did not go into the nature center where I watched to see if he got into a car that I could actually get the license plate, because we know that calling immediately is the best thing we can do. We also know there's a response time of 8 to 10 minutes, depending on where the police are, because there's only so many to go around. It is a large park, and there's a lot of people out. I did what I could to keep myself safe, asking the gentleman, first of all, to leash his dog. Was yelled at that he did not have to, he was not going to. When he knew I was calling, he did put the dog on a leash and again crossed the road and went into an area that I was not going to take my horse because it's not an approved bridle trail. When the rangers came over, they did look for him. I don't know if they found him. I'm sure they don't. One of the things I will bring up, because Mr. Moore, you did ask about how many incidents are reported, not many. Unfortunately, horse riders know that they need to do it at that moment. If you have a dog that's just aggressive on the side of the trail, barking and snarling and trying to get off those leashes, they're more concerned with their horses that are going to be either fight or flight. Nobody wants to all of a sudden have a horse that spins and takes off. So they're more concerned with their horse and their safety. We do try to ask everyone if they are an uncontrolled dog or a dog that's having an issue, a little bit excited, we ask them to call the dog by name and tell them, leave it. Not no, not pulling on the leash, but name and leave it, trying to educate people. When a dog comes at you willy-nilly, just, you know, happy little puppy-like, that's a lot different than when a dog is aggressively charging. And again, we try to get people to understand, get pictures, get IDs, take note of your surroundings, know where you are, and then as soon as you're safe to call. What I hear from people is they're not going to do anything anyways. It's always too late until somebody gets hurt. And right now we've had a couple of people that did get hurt. We've tried to figure out a way to increase the knowledge of, you know, more signage. Nobody wants more signs. Facebook, webpage, the podcast, doing another video over here that maybe addresses how dog walkers should be interacting with horses. We know how it should be. And the people that break the rules and the laws are going to continue to do that no matter how much education is out there. They feel entitled. They feel that they too pay their taxes and they can do whatever they want on the trail, is what we hear from some of the culprits. I'll just use that.
When you pass a person when you're on horseback, with a dog on a leash, what is the process there?
Most people are very good, and we really appreciate it, because we don't want to give up trails. We don't want anyone else to give up trails. We want to be courteous and share them. So most people will willingly move over to the side and go single file, as we do single file. You don't know if you're going to be meeting one person with a dog or if you're going to have six or seven people with two or three dogs. If they're not moving over and they're just kind of enjoying the day, we ask them to go single file or to pull off. If it's an aggressive dog that we see the person is having some difficulty, we ask them to go into the grass a few feet. Don't go behind a tree and hide, because horses don't want to all of a sudden be startled that somebody's walking out in front of them. So for the most part, people are very good. Millstream, I've had two incidents over there, and I've never called, because it's like you try to educate them. My horses didn't get hurt, but I actually had one dog on my horse's tail being dragged down the parkway, and we tried to educate that person. There was a woman that's riding a boot. She has a shoe, unfortunately, like you at this moment, walking two dogs, and she's on the phone, and her dog just managed to get out of her hand, off her leash, and grab onto my horse, my husband's horse, while he was riding. At least it ended okay that day. I haven't seen her since. I think she goes to a different park.
Kathy, it sounds like you've been riding for quite a while. Have these incidents of dogs picked up over what period
they
of time?
They have. And, you know, I was on, because Facebook, a lot of information goes there. There was a couple of these dogs are unidentified, and that's the unfortunate thing. One, they do have the license plate. The other woman, we know that her name, the dog's name is Emma. I think she's right over there, Eastland Road, or down by Bagley. She's been seen in the park several times, but nobody gets a name of these people, and that's the other thing. People that are breaking the law are not going to just willingly give you the name. When you hear what's going on and people are calling, Emma, Emma, come here, that's when we were able to identify that and see that it was a black and white border collie, per Nancy. I've been riding these parks since 2001. I brought a horse back down here in March, so I've been all over and encountered. You know, for the most part, we see good people, but Rocky River has increased. It just seems to be the one down by the river. Lewis Road Ring, that is a big area that people like to let their dogs run. They don't think that it's a horse area. They think it's a dog park. There was 118 comments, I think, on one of the Facebook posts that I put out asking for people to identify these people. And again, for riders to call the Metro Parks if there is a problem. They need to call right then. They need to give identifying information, whatever they can. And they also need to try to get a license plate. But again, they're not going to go off their trails, because then we're the ones that are breaking the law. But they have been increased. I think myself, I think with COVID, a lot more people came out. There's a lot more anxious people. There's a lot more dogs that became anxious. I know my dog was just kind of like, he wasn't sure what was going on in COVID, me working from home a couple of days. Why are you just hanging out? You're not even coming out of the room. You're just sitting there. And, you know, there was a whole different ballgame. I think that the increase, there's more people using the park, there's more dogs, and there's more people feeling they're entitled to do what they want with their dog to help get the energy. I don't have any numbers to back it up.
Thank you.
Facebook, though, does have a lot more posts on there.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
But we appreciate, I know that, talk to Chief, and that there are other things that are being put in place, and the Rangers going up there now to see. But even off-foot traffic, instead of horses, so that people don't necessarily see the horses, that might be another free one, as Marty had mentioned, increasing the traffic. Whatever we could do to assist to get this under control, we'd really appreciate it. We just want to be out there too and enjoying our horses. So thank you.
Thank you.
One possibility is getting pictures of the dogs.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, the education process, and not to the point, you know, this is my 14th year here, and there are certain cycles, no pun intended, of bikes and car conflicts. You know, certainly, you know, we hate to see anybody injured in the park, you know, due to, you know, the nature of these things. But the advent of, you know, GoPros, a lot of, you know, cyclists put GoPros on their heads as they went out, and that's how we were able to help curtail some of the activity. And that may be one of the techniques, you know, certainly I think enforcement from the police department, you know, and Kathy and Penny and the entire OH team, I mean, they probably log the most miles of any county, you know, because of the relationship, not only with the Metro Parks, but Cuyahoga Valley National Park. And, you know, one incident's way too many. And so, you know, the team will continue to diligently work at it. Pet owners need to be continually, you know, minded that, you know, it's a serious thing when you're, you know, 5-6 feet up in the air. It can be a huge, huge problem. So we appreciate their approach. Our teams will be proactive. Again, if we can get, you know, names and faces, it will definitely help us. So.
Thank you. Any other comments?
We will move into the information briefing and policy items. The very first one we have is the Zoo Conservation Funds 2024. Dr. Kuhar.
Morning, commissioners.
Morning.
So every year we do an end of the year summary of where we've been with our conservation, what dollars we spent, and what the actual impact of that has been. So this is our summary for 2024. It's been a really good year. No, I'm the one who didn't turn it on. There we go. Thank you. So just a reminder, as we look at the zoo's institutional conservation strategy, we obviously tier into the Metro Parks Second Century Plan. Our funding sources are largely from Cleveland Zoological Society and Cleveland Metro Parks restricted accounts. And by that, I mean, we do not use our operational dollars to leave the taxing district. We use the funds from Cleveland Zoological Society, which is largely generated from 10% of membership sales. That's part of the operating agreement that you approved earlier today. Thank you for that. As well as philanthropy and investments on the part of Cleveland Zoological Society. So they provide us the majority of the funds that go into our international conservation projects. We also have individual restricted accounts. The Future for Wildlife Make a Difference Fund is the Quarters for Conservation program. That's where those funds come from. And then we have individual funds that come from, for instance, the Future for Wildlife 5K, Aramark Conservation Fund is part of our contract with Aramark. Thank you, sir. And then lastly, I have on here the AZA Safe Funds. So AZA Safe is an AZA branded conservation program. The program is basically started by two organizations who take the lead in it. I don't know if we're still in this category, but a few years ago, we were the lead on more AZA Safe programs than any other zoo in North America. We may not be in that category any longer because a lot of additional programs have come on board. One of the things that you can do as part of that SAFE program as a lead organization is basically be the repository for funds. So individual zoos put money into our restricted account, and then we disperse that on behalf of AZA SAFE. That's why in the information item, it shows that we have contributed $845,000 towards conservation through Cleveland Zoological Society and ourselves. And then there's an additional $78,000. Those $78,000 aren't our monies. We're just passing them through on behalf of the AZA SAFE program. Just a quick summary on our programs. We have six core programs. These are our six core Future for Wildlife programs. And then we have a number of smaller dollar collaborations. So our Asian Turtle program was actually created in 2003. This is our second oldest program. And the impact is really powerful. This is mostly in Vietnam and Korea, Turtle Conservation Center and Cuc Phuong National Park. When we talk about endangered species, the Swinhoe's soft-shell turtle, they believe that there are two left in the wild. So when you're talking about a conservation program, a conservation impact, basically being able to rescue turtles, extract DNA, use that for potential genetic work in the future to literally keep a species from extinction is tremendously important. It also serves to support confiscation. So there were 600 turtles confiscated in South Korea. That work is being supported by the funds that we provide. Additionally, Dr. Mike Selig has been to Vietnam a couple of times, and he's served to provide veterinary support, particularly on these confiscations. He provides advice on how to care for the turtles, how to keep them alive so that they can potentially be repatriated. Illegal wildlife trade, this is a program that we started during my board service with AZA. Kim Gopp has been instrumental in this, but the AZA Wildlife Trafficking Alliance is a key program that we support. We are one of the founding institutions of that. And this is a catch-all for a number of programs that we support. Tiger conservation in Eastern Russia, Education for Nature Vietnam is a confiscation network and basically a tip network that helps patrol wildlife trafficking in Vietnam. There was another sort of wildlife trade kingpin that was arrested and prosecuted in Vietnam earlier this year. That's helped supported by our funds. And then the African Wildlife Foundation started a wildlife justice program where they have wildlife sniffing dogs in Ethiopia. This is a program that we've been able to support as well. Giraffe conservation, we support giraffe conservation largely in Namibia and Kenya. Twiga Witu is a giraffe relocation program in Kenya and in Uganda. Ruma National Park in Kenya is a giraffe conservation program. Plus, we support training. So we support the training of African wildlife vets. There are not that many vets in Africa. There are even fewer wildlife trained vets. So this program where we train 16 new vets and 30 continuing professional development units for existing vets is key to help provide that infrastructure in Namibia and eastern Kenya. Andean bear. So this is one of our core conservation projects. The gentleman in the blue and purple windbreaker up here, this is Isak Goldstein. The action item earlier in this board meeting was for his contract. Isak is basically one of the original Andean bear researchers. He continues to work with us with the Andean Bear Conservation Alliance. Kim Gopp is the lead. She essentially was key in creating the Andean Bear Conservation Alliance. And as Brian said in the action item, we support protected areas in Colombia, Ecuador, Peru, Bolivia, Venezuela, and most of this work is occurring through training and analysis workshops where we provide training opportunities for local professionals to continue to monitor and have a multi-country, multi-habitat conservation program and strategy for Andean bear, and we've been a key part of that. Lion and cheetah conservation, I think this is, again, one of our core programs that we've been really successful with, really. A big part of this is collaring lions. So collaring lions so the researchers know where they are. We also have a tremendous program that the Lion Landscapes program provides porridge, so basically like an oatmeal, to over 1,000 kids in villages every day. And in many of these villages, this is going to be the only meal that these kids receive in a given day. So when you're doing that as part of a conservation program, you have kids growing up respecting the work and appreciating the work that the conservation program does. Through this work, they've shown that carnivore attacks on livestock and on people are down by 60%, kills of livestock are down by 80%. So there's a tremendous impact for creating these programs, and we've been a core partner for that. Oh, wait, and I want to just mention, we also have a program that guests can get involved in here, our Lights for Lions campaign. We actually take in old, unwanted holiday lights. So, and I say holiday lights because it really starts, people are lighting their houses for Halloween as well through the winter holidays. We collect those lights, we recycle them with the Solid Waste District, and then all of the funds that are generated from the recycling dollars by recycling that wire, we put back into lion conservation. So about $25,000 went into this year's conservation budget just by people bringing their used holiday lights to us. And then finally, the big part program is our gorillas. We do a tremendous amount of work with gorillas. Kristen Lucas has been the chair of the Diane Fossey Gorilla Fund Board of Directors for the past year and a half. We prevented a conservation award to Marie Fidel Tuyisenge. She's from Rwanda and a graduate student in Germany. She does amazing work with gorilla conservation. We've supported 10 memoir students, so these are undergraduate students at the University of Rwanda, provided 4 internships to really build that infrastructure of new research, new science capacity in Rwanda, which is still, even though it's almost, you know, 30 years since the genocide, is still really important. And then we provide Grauer's gorilla protection, or help support Grauer's gorilla protection in the Democratic Republic of Congo. In the past 5 years, we've seen a 13% increase in the mountain gorilla population. So when you're doing conservation work, it's sometimes hard to see population numbers really change. I guess part of the advantage is the population is so small, so you can count every individual animal. But to have a 13% increase in 5 years is pretty remarkable. And then finally, we have a number of collaborative programs. These are smaller dollar programs in the $5,000 to $10,000 window annually. And these programs are a variety of species. This is kind of how we conduct conservation on the rest of the population of the zoo. Trumpeter swans, I just want to mention that. You see the picture in the bottom right, Governor DeWine presenting an award to our team. We've been doing trumpeter swan reintroduction since the 90s. The zoo went and harvested eggs in Alaska. We bred trumpeter swans. We reintroduced trumpeter swans through the 90s and the early 2000s to the point where trumpeter swan is basically delisted in the state of Ohio. That's largely through the effort of your zoo bringing trumpeter swans back to Ohio, and that was recognized by the state earlier this year. The other project that I'll specifically call out is our work with orangutan conservation. We've done orangutan conservation supporting bridges across rivers to help unite isolated populations in orangutans. That's a story we're going to talk about more, particularly with opening primate forest in 2026 and having a new outdoor orangutan habitat as part of that exhibit. So with that, I have to leave it on a cute baby animal picture. This is actually from Rwanda in Virunga National Park. So any questions?
Great.
Thank you. Great job.
And the last thing I'll do, I'll give you Connect Magazine. There is a full-page article in here about AZA Gorilla Safe, which is, again, a project that we support and serve as not only a lead, but also the bank for the pass-through funds for our AZA conservation. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Excellent job, and a credit to your entire team. You know, part of the, when you see the mission, you know, this was inspiring conservation of our world. So this is part of the main part of what we get to do. The next info item is Irish Town Bend Park, part of the Cleveland Foundation Centennial Lake Link Trail, Franklin Avenue enhancements. Sean and Sarah will be giving an update.
Thank you, Brian. Good morning again, commissioners. Sarah and I are going to walk through an update on Irish Town Bend Park, which also includes Cleveland Foundation Centennial Lake Link Trail and the Franklin Avenue enhancements. And, you know, we're going to jump right in. So we've got a video to play here, and that'll kind of walk us through some of the highlights of the park and the trail itself. So, thank you, Mr. Ben. Irish Town Bend has been a collective effort of over 11 agencies and partners for now more than a decade. We're located on the western bank of the Cuyahoga. These few kind of images will give you the geography here. What's really unique and important about this is you can see that missing link in Irish Town Bend for this final section of the Cleveland Foundation Centennial Lake Link Trail along the base of the river and the base of the park. So the park itself is 25 acres. It has gone or undergone a very, very hyper-local and regional planning efforts. There are several aspects of the plan that this video highlights. Most of the planning has been done under the stewardship of Land Studio, They have really gone above and beyond, not only to engage some very, very talented landscape architects and planners, but also to really work with the residents of Riverview and Lakeview Estates. A lot of the park components, like the playground you see here, came from interactions and feedback from those who live directly in and around the park. So specifically here, we're looking at kind of a nature-themed playground at the top of the bluff. We want to make sure that we're really including some really unique ability for play structures there and really having it be influenced by nature itself. Up on the north end of the park, there has the possibility for a cafe to be planned. There's a lot of work yet that still needs to be done to work out the details of how a cafe could be accomplished here. But there is more or less a placeholder in the master plan that was developed for that use itself. Right now, there's plans for a wetland healing garden. As part of the ports work, which we'll talk about in a minute, they had to do some stormwater control. We're, as we start to really get more involved in this plan, because up to this date, we've only been really involved in the trail work. As we start to really work more on the plan, this is one of the components that we really want to understand better to make sure that that's a, it's a right long-term fit in terms of having the water, the pond on the hillside. But the picnic grove and the event lawn are two areas that we really think will be strong components for the park itself. Irishtown Bend itself has an incredible history of heritage. One of the outcomes of the planning process was to really highlight those who have lived and been on the hillside prior to this time period. So what you see here are those metal frames are actually signifying where homes once stood. We've got footprints of homes. We've got the ability to interpret what was literally a neighborhood nestled next to a series of railroad tracks, coal docks, breweries, just an amazing history that the hillside has that portion can really interpret. Then moving to the south end of the park. This is a bit more aspirational. Some of these items that you're seeing in the video are really more long-term, like this boardwalk. So there's a boardwalk planned in the master plan here along the riverfront. There is actually, this is where the bulkhead work ends today that we'll show you a slide of that the port is working on. But one of the great things about this plan is there's lots of components. So over time, as the park matures and grows, these components can be added as funds are raised. Here we're in a section of the Lake Link Trail, and then this is a pretty unique proposal to construct slides starting from the higher elevation on Franklin and then moving down to the lower elevation closer to the river. So the Riverwalk and the Mandel Foundation Maritime Theater, Mandels have been, and the Mandel Foundation have been a great supporter of the project. The Maritime Theater here is this unique combination of lawn terraces, small walls to sit on and take in great views of the river, the maritime activity in downtown itself. The Riverwalk is actually part of the Lake Link Trail. Sarah's gonna give some background on the Lake Link Trail itself and the Franklin Avenue enhancements. But this gives you a very good shot of how park components like the Mandel Theater and the trail all work together in concert for really a very, very unique and world-class park. And then some of the last components here, we're on the north end of the park. This is Lake Link Trail coming out of the viaduct over Old Detroit Road. By Stonebridge and then headed into the park. We're headed southbound right now under the Detroit Superior Viaduct. So here we have some really, really cool opportunities for climbing wall. You can see in the background, those are the old B&O railroad tunnels that we can illuminate and really kind of celebrate as a former piece of heritage on the site. So as we zoom out, you'll get a good perspective of the trail and the whole park itself. Rain Studio is undergoing a fundraising process. There's approximately $30 million-plus funded to date of their $45 to $50 million goal. $10.8 million of that was recently awarded with the Outdoor Recreational Legacy Program, of which Cleveland Metro Parks was a sponsor. The next slide I'd like to show you is the work that the Port is undergoing right now. So they are undergoing a $60 million hillside stabilization project. They're holding all the contracts. They are working with several contractors here. So this gives you a glimpse just a few weeks ago of their massive amount of earthwork. The park work and the trail work cannot take place until the Port stabilization work is done. Sarah's going to walk us through some of the more details on the trail.
Sean, yes, are they then putting essentially another flat layer on are they removing material? So you know, the green line you have there, that I guess would be the first one. And then this second ledge here, is that sort of dug out of the hillside?
It is. So in the 1960s, the Army Corps of Engineer, in their wisdom, brought in several hundred thousand cubic yards of dredge material to stabilize the hillside. And actually, all that really did was accelerate some of the issues. So the Port is taking 250,000 cubic yards off the hillside and taking it to other places. And we won't call it a terrace. It kind of looks terraced right now. They'll be smoothing some of those slopes. But in essence, they're doing a lot of the prep work along the riverfront that we'll then take on and build the trail over. And then up top and over by Detroit Superior Bridge, some of these grades will be softened yet.
Well, this is an amazing project. I mean, this is going to be absolutely spectacular.
It is.
Good morning, commissioners. So moving forward, you can see our trail map, the Centennial Trail Irishtown Bend segment. That is the missing link of all of the things that we put in, all the trails that opened up in 2021 and the couple years prior to that. So very important trail to us, and it really does complete that system on the west side of the river. And as Sean mentioned, our work with Irishtown Bend had focused on the Lake Link Trail portion, and you can see that in that pinkish red color. It's evolved over time. We were a stakeholder in the larger group with the park planning process, but this kind of shows the different areas, multiple projects happening on the hillside. There's the overall stabilization project, but then the reddish area with the Lake Link Trail, we've been leading design. We have 30% plans done. We have been timing it with the stabilization project because there have been some minor changes to that influenced the trail design. We were approached last year by NOAACA, the Metropolitan Planning Organization, to take over sponsorship of that bluish-purple area, the Franklin Avenue Enhancements Project. This was a congressionally designated spending award that was given through Sherrod Brown's office, and it was awarded to NOAACA, and NOAACA needed a sponsor for the project, so they approached us about taking this on. It was originally applied for in hopes that it would be bundled with the Port Stabilization Project, but came a little too late to be able to merge those projects. And so since we'll be in the area doing the Lake Link Trail, we have accepted sponsorship of that project. It is the funding that comes with it. We have no financial contribution to that piece, to that blue piece, but we will be managing that project. And then in the yellow is just the overall park project, just to show the delineations there. And another view of it with the hillside, because definitely when you're working in three dimensions with the grading and everything, it is a complex project. And that's why you do have multiple trails that will eventually be built as part of the project to be able to make those connections to the top of the hill and trying to maintain that accessibility. There's a lot of run that you have to get for 5% grade.
Okay. One final note is we are working with the Ohio Department of Transportation. We've put in a request to deliver these projects, construction manager at risk, which would be the first time in District 12 that a local public agency such as ourselves would construct these items in this manner. So that is on an ongoing process. So our goal is to construct the trail, the Franklin enhancements, and then the park components, of which we are now a recent sponsor, hopefully with one contractor. So we have a lot more we'll bring back to you as these items are funded and finalized, and happy to answer any questions you have.
Excellent work.
So the trail is in design. No construction has started on that yet. And also same with Franklin. No construction has started with that. That is, still in the planning process.
I want to make sure we have the nuance of Franklin Avenue. The port in their project is constructing the roadway itself. What we're taking on sponsorship for are the enhancements only, which are a sidewalk next to it and mm-hmm. some lighting.
Still so, in the planning stages, though.
Very much nothing's still in the planning, started, in okay. the early design process.
Okay, thank you.
Absolutely, thank you.
Excellent work, thank you. The next information item is innovation solutions to complex challenges. I'm reminded of this kind of the six parts of the honeycomb. When you talk about connections, we just covered that. We talked about conservation with the zoo. Now we're going to cover innovation, which may be one of the most fun info items of the year. Dan, you're going to love this.
Oh. Wow.
No pressure.
No pressure. No pressure.
While we pull up the PowerPoint here real quick. So I think many times in the board meetings, we talk about, the big projects, Irishtown Bend, and a lot of times the in-house crews have a large part in a lot of that. Garfield is a good example, the Chagrin to Solon trail there. So what I'm excited to talk about today is a little bit different. And while these crews will have a large part in those large projects, there's a whole world of problem solving and fabrication and challenges going on kind of behind the scenes that oftentimes go unnoticed, and we don't talk about all that often. But nonetheless, they're either as impressive or sometimes even more impressive than the parts that we play in these larger projects. So just to take you back a little bit, we've talked about in the past how our crews have slung thousands of pounds of rocks overhead into the woods to build trails without disturbing the natural landscape that's out there. Whether we use a highline system and pulleys, or we use slides to slide them down the hillsides. This was one we did a few years ago where we had to create a living billboard, and it sounds pretty easy until you have to figure out how to water the living billboard, because rain's not going to hit it. So this one actually will rotate on a hinge and pin system and become like a tabletop, so we can water it and let the water soak in and then stand it back up for the photo op there. We've talked about how we've been able to embed steel beams into the logs on the outside of bridges to make the bridges look like a timber bridge. But in reality, it's a steel structure that's hidden within the timbers that allows us to drive equipment and vehicles over top of them. We've talked about how we've jacked staircases left to right that were collapsing in on themselves with a system that's typically used to pick up a house. We used it in a horizontal fashion and kind of pushed those walls back to where they should be and then anchored them in without destroying the masonry integrity of the wall. We figured
that's
out
Garfield
a
park, right?
I'm sorry?
That's Garfield Park.
That's Garfield Park. That was 2017 right here in Garfield Park, just up the hill from all the pond work that we just completed. We've talked about in the past how we created a dolly and hitch system, and this is how we get 50-foot beams back into the woods, low impact, to build trail bridges. We've talked about how we've dropped trees on Dr. Kuhar's deck over here at the zoo, utilizing recycled tires to make sure we didn't do any structural damage to the deck. And then a couple good ones here. This was a system that we built, the panels that go up the inside of the chutes here, each one weighs about 75 pounds, which doesn't sound like a lot until you're doing it on an almost vertical plane. So we comprise this system here. There's a pulley right here that you can't, or a cable right here attached to a pulley that pulled this system up the hill. And if you look over here, the panels were set on that system where we simply rode along on that buggy and set those panels in as we were going up. And then finally, one of the most challenging things I've ever had to do in my career anywhere is figure out how to take a ski lift and make it lift toboggans to the top of the hill and load them automatically. This was done in 2012. It's the most innovative thing that we've ever done, in my opinion. and 13 years and running with this system in place, and it's still functioning as it did on day one. So in 2024, we threw a couple other challenges at the crews. This is our fab shop in Strongsville. And this beam right here is a leftover beam that we had when we tore down the original Edgewater Beach House before we built the one that's standing in place today. And there was a handful of these beams, and we had used a couple other of them for a temporary bridge structure that we haul it around the park district and use it as temporary crossings during construction, and then we pull it out and use it in the next place. But we had an extra beam, and we are challenged always when we build these bridges in the middle of the woods on how to set these beams. And 12 years ago, we decided to migrate towards, instead of pure timber structures, when we get to be about 20 feet or longer, the timber starts to become non-economical, and we don't get the service life out of it. So I migrated us towards steel structures on hiking bridges. So if you go around, like North Chagrin is a good example, we've built, I think, 8 bridges back there in the past 10 years, and all of them are steel structures. The problem is, how do you get the steel back there? Well, you saw the dolly and the four-wheeler on how we get the steel, but then how do we set the steel in place? And while our large-scale excavator has a reach of about 26 feet, it always seemed like we were about 10 feet short or 15 feet short. So the only other option that we could come up with was putting the excavator in the middle of the creek to set the beams. Well, nobody likes that idea, right? We're doing detrimental damage to the creek. It's not a good practice to take an excavator down there anyway. So I challenged the group to come up with a way to build an extension that can attach to the excavator. And what you see here is a beam that has this bracket. This is all fabbed in our fab shop with our own staff. And this bracket right here can bolt onto a traditional bucket that we have on our John Deere 180 excavator, right? And we can hook that then to a chain right here. And that chain supports the cantilevered end of this beam. And on the bottom of that beam, we can hang the beam that we want to set. And that this right here will then allow us to more or less have a crane-type vehicle that we can take into the woods. Because the other problem we have is we can always set a beam with a crane, but you can't get a big crane 2 miles into the woods to do that, right? The crane won't fit, and then all the damage that will do will not be worth it. So as far as the structural aspect, if you look at, I'm going to get real nerdy on you here, but if you look at this contraption right here, I know what you're thinking. Boy, Jim, that looks like a right angle triangle, right? Yes, commissioners, that's a right angle triangle. So if we have a right angle triangle, we know that through the theorem of Pythagorean, we can calculate we can calculate the distance that all this is, right? This is the length, a squared plus b squared, the whole deal. And we know that if it's a right angle triangle and we have the three lengths through our friends sine, cosine, and tangent, we can figure out what this angle is. And if we know that angle, we can figure out what the resultant tensile strength has to be in this chain based on the weight that we're hanging off the end of it right there. So we can simply modify what chain we use right here as needed to support whatever size beam that we're sitting out here. And all the hooks that you see on the top here that we welded on are all in 2-foot increments. So we know that if we have a 60-foot beam, we put this at 30 feet, and we will hit it right in the middle and be able to cantilever out. So when you watch this,
what class are you going
to
present this to?
I'm sorry?
What class are you going to present this to?
You tell me, wherever we need to go.
High school math class, see, you actually need to know this.
Yeah.
That's right. So here is this thing in action. So this is a 40-foot beam. This 40-foot beam weighs 50 pounds per foot. So we have a 2,000-pound beam out here, okay? And we are, the distance from here to here is about 20 feet, and the distance from here back to the excavator that is, I'm sorry, it's out of the picture, is another 26 feet. So we can set this 40-foot beam 46 feet away from where the actual operator is sitting. And that is hugely beneficial when we're sitting in the woods, and we can sit on the side of the trail, and we can extend out 45, 46, maybe 48 feet to set a beam in place and not do detrimental damage to the natural resource aspect of what we're doing out there. So
how you swing it.
Very much so.
I can tell you with confidence that this thing that we built right here cost us $0 and 0 cents to build, aside from the staff time, because all of this, obviously the beam was left over from the old Edgewater Beach House, and all of this tube stock here is just stuff that we had from past projects. We have a huge inventory of chains for all of our strapping of our equipment that we do to move it around and whatnot, and all of those chains are all rated with tags, so we know the tensile strength of all those chains. So the math is real easy. We have our Pythagorean theorem. We figure out the tensile strength. We put the appropriate chain on at the length, depending on the beam that we're setting. So this was something fun that we were able to come up with that, although it seems fun and silly, right, and we're talking about math, a huge benefit for us to have out in the field when we're working in the woods trying to be as low impact as we can.
And can that bridge then, can that carry a small motor vehicle?
So these bridges that we build,
yeah,
they will carry 90 pounds per square foot,
which
will support a vehicle.
Yeah.
Looking for Army surplus?
No, I was just thinking of how elegant some of these tiny suspension bridges are that Sean has got scattered around.
Yep, for sure, yep. So Byers Pond is the next one. It was a unique challenge. So I got a phone call from a very passionate trail user a couple years ago. He's very informed. And he asked me, Jim, why does Byers Pond Trail Network only go halfway around the pond on one side and stop, and go a quarter of the way around the pond on the other side and stop? And there's no connection and no loop. And I said, gee, Brian Zimmerman, I don't know why that is, but I will figure out a way to fix this riddle. So we started looking at it, and the reason that it doesn't go all the way around is really simple. This is our property line right here, and it's the map shows it somewhat clear, but if you really go out there, in reality is there's no room to create a hiking trail to get around this side of the pond. So back in the day, they said, all right, well, we can't do that, so let's just stop the trail, and let's go over here and stop the trail, and it is what it is. Well, we wanted to take it a step further. So when we relocated the barge, in this picture, you can see the barge in the background. When we relocated the barge to Wildwood Marina, we had to remove some docks to do that. And we started looking at the structural integrity of the docks, and while the decking is not in the greatest shape because it's, you know, weathered and whatnot, everything underneath it seemed to be just fine. So we set our SCA conservation crew out there and simply had them undeck some portions of what was sitting in the parking lot. And what we discovered underneath was perfectly intact galvanized bracketry with perfectly intact floats. So we decided to get forestry out to Byers Pond, and we big shotted a line and pulled it taut that kind of set our alignment on where we wanted to put this connector trail. We used our site division to pick up the docks after we hauled them out there and set them in the water. And before we did that, I should say, we redecked everything at the Millstream Yard, so all the decking on top is brand new. And then we simply gave our trails division some oars and said, let's row ourselves over to the new trail location. So that's what they're doing right here. They are really they're rowing their way over to the new trail location. So we got them in place, and you can see that line right here. And then it came to, well, how are we going to secure the docks from floating around? We can't just tie them to the rope, right? So everywhere else that we set boardwalks and whatnot, we use this post pounder right here. The problem is that this post pounder weighs about 70 to 80 pounds. And these poles that we're putting in have to be a third in the ground, two-thirds out of the ground. And while it looks to be okay right here, when we get into the middle of the pond here, the depth of the water is about 10 feet, right? So we're going to have 30 to 40-foot poles that we have to pound in. And while I told them, just put the post pounder at the end and stand it up like we do everywhere else, they claimed they weren't rolling their eyes, but between me and you, they were rolling their eyes at me. So they came back the next day. So we gave that a shot. And while we can do it in shallow water, you can see Max right here standing. You know, we're just going to get worse and worse and worse. And we did this in late October, early November. So the water is not ideal for being in. So they came back the next day, and they built this contraption and brought it to us. And this contraption right here, this is simply a framed wood structure, and it's on hinges down here, and it's bolted to these skids. And these skids are bolted to what we basically created was a little barge. There's a cable that goes up to a pulley system right here. That cable comes down over here to a winch. And what we would do is we were able to then use this to pick up the post pounder and the pole at the same time and be able to line it up exactly where we needed it based on the hinged connection that we had right here, and we were able to pound those posts in. The other thing is that this thing weighs 70 pounds. If we were trying to stand this up and it slipped off of that pipe and it fell into the water 12 feet deep, nobody's going down there to get it back out. We would have lost our post pounder. So this was a very unique way that they were able to figure out how to get this job done, utilizing some very basic engineering type fundamentals here. I would like to go back. And you can even see with this hinged connection right here, we didn't have the ability to get our barge on the other side because the trail spans the whole length. So with that hinged connection right there, we were able to adjust the angle and then reach the poles that were on the far side as well. And then after all that was said and done, we decided to leave the barge in place and just bolt it to the walk. And now it's a little bump out that you can see right here that people can use for fishing. They can use to sit on a bench that might be out there someday. And this is what we look like today out there. And we are currently in the process of finishing the two connecting ramps on either side. And when that's all said and done, the Brian Zimmerman connector trail across Byers Pond, which will be right here, will be intact, and the red is what we are going to cut in as new natural surface trail, and we will then have a half-mile looped trail around Byers Pond. And then finally, the water, the Royal View water main. So over the summer, we got a note from finance that the utility bill for Royal View restroom was a little too large for comfort. When you look at past history, it was way above where it should be. And just for reference, this is the Royal View picnic area right here. Not only is this a reservable shelter, this is a flush restroom that is in service for that facility out there. And then this is the trailhead to our Royal View mountain bike trail. So it's a very popular area. And with people reserving the pavilion or utilizing the mountain bike trail, the restroom, and there's an attached water fountain, we're very critical to how people use this property. So way back in the day, the utilities for this bathroom were run from this subdivision down here, which is a street called Greenbrier. It's a City of Strongsville street. And the word is that long term, this road was supposed to come all the way through and connect. And for one reason or another, it did not, but the utilities were run through this corridor like they did in the 70s. The problem was that over time, this whole corridor that was disturbed transformed itself into a very high quality wetland complex, which you can see through all this hatching right here. And the distance from here to here is about 3,500 feet, so over a half mile of underground utilities. Somewhere in the wetland, we had a water leak. And when we went out there and walked it to try to find the wet, soil where the water leak was, the entire corridor is wet because it's a wetland. So we had no idea where the water line was, A, or B, where the leak was, because all of the ground that we were walking on was saturated, you know, from the rain. So we limped ourselves through the summer, and come fall time, we usually winterize this anyway, we started looking at options, and one option was to have, so we can't open cut dig it, you know, we have the ability to do it, but with all the environmental protection there, we didn't want, that was not an option. So option number two was to hire a company to directionally drill from Greenbrier 3,500 feet to here through the woods and pull a new plastic water line. So there's two options within that option. The first option is to use traditional drilling equipment, but that can only get us about 500 feet. So we could get that done for about traditionally $10 to $15 a lineal foot. But since they can only do 500 feet at a time, we would be digging holes in the woods and hauling this, the drilling equipment through the woods to get there. A, not great for the wetlands. B, if we get in the wetlands, it's probably going to sink, and then we're not going to get it out. So drilling 500-foot holes was not an option either. The third option was to drill a well. And we had a ballpark price to drill a well right here to provide potable water. They told us about $70,000, and I was like, way too much. So then we contacted another company to drill it who has bigger equipment. And to drill from here to here, the guy said, yeah, I could probably do it. And he said, it's going to be expensive. And I said, well, it's got to be less than $70,000 because that's how much it would be to drill a well. And he said, you better drill the well. So then we weren't even going to go down that road. So what we decided to do was we cut open the plastic line. This is the 3-inch plastic line right here. And we contrapped this. We made this contraption right here, and we hooked it to a large-scale air compressor, and we blew the existing water line clean. All right? And after we got it clean, we drilled a hole right here in this coupling, and we attached it to a string, and on the end of that string was a simple grocery bag. And we turned that air back on, and we blew 3,000 feet of string attached to that grocery bag all the way to the other end. So now we're in good shape. So now we have a string that runs through this line. So now what do we do?
Laparoscopic surgery.
Right? So then we attach that string to what's called mule tape, which is specifically to pull pipe or electric lines through conduit.
So you relined it?
Just wait.
We're getting there. Right. Thank you for your enthusiasm. I know you can't wait, right? So after we got the string through, we attached it to the mule tape. We pulled the mule tape the opposite way. So now we have 3,000 feet of mule tape that's in the line. And then we hooked the mule tape to the pipe. And we bought 1.5-inch HDPE pipe, and we hooked it to the mule tape, and we started pulling. That 1.5-inch HDPE pipe, the outside diameter of that, gave us 1/7 of an inch clearance between the inner diameter of this pipe right here and the outer diameter.
Yeah.
Right? So, and we knew that that HDPE pipe had some weight to it. So as we were pulling along here, we were watching that mule tape stretch. And if you do the math, so the mule tape came undone once as we were pulling. So the mule tape came unattached once, and we saw 100 foot of recoil back because of all the weight we were pulling on it. So then we were like, okay, so we have a lot of stress on this. We cannot afford to stop pulling once we start pulling. Otherwise, we're going to stop, and that mule tape's going to want to pull backwards. So we were initially going to do it with some type of pulley or winch system, but that would, we didn't have something that had the capacity to pull 3,000 feet of this mule tape through at a high stress level. So what we decided to do is we hooked the mule tape to the front tracks of the mini excavator, and we picked the front track of the mini excavator up off the ground utilizing the boom, and we simply drove that track forward, and we used that as the winch to pull the mule tape through. So now we can watch a video on the right here. You can see that mule tape's getting pulled. And that's the excavator right there pulling that mule tape through, just like a traditional winch would do. So wouldn't you, oh, one more thing. So we were concerned about the friction. Obviously, we only have 7/8 inch of play. And from fall, from one end to the other, we had 14 lineal feet of elevation change. So we knew there was some of this going on with the existing water main, and we were worried about all of that rubbing. So we had to put pipe grease on this. Now, having somebody in a hole with a paintbrush for 6 hours while we're pulling pipe, putting this lubricant on the pipe was just not something that we thought was a good use of our time. So what we did is we bought a bucket, we drilled holes through it, we flipped it upside down, and as we pulled the pipe through that bucket, the heat of the friction heated up the lubricant, and the lubricant started to settle itself as we were pulling through, and we just kind of greased that pipe automatically as it was getting pulled from one side to the next. So in 6 hours, we started pulling on the upstream side here at Royal View Picnic Area, and 6 hours later, this is the pipe coming out, that's it attached to the excavator. So we effectively pulled 3,500 feet of pipe through the old pipe in the middle of the woods, and we didn't do one hole in the middle of the wetland complex that was out there. So if you look at a cost perspective, so the $70,000+ was the best option we had. When we decided to go this route, we bought this blue pipe right here for $5,000 with the lubricant, and we spent about another $1,000-ish total for the mule tape and a couple other accessories. So we were able to replace this water line. Initially, that was going to cost us $70,000 for just about $6,000.
So you're filing the papers to protect the rights to this?
We're
going to
pan this.
Sean, why aren't you doing some of this stuff?
Did here, is you can see this rope right here. We pulled tracer wire with it. So the next Jim Rostrom down the line who has this water line who's broken in the middle of the woods, they could hook onto it and they at least know where it is. So we're able to put tracer wire in there now. So now we know exactly where it is in the woods.
That's awesome.
How are you?
Thank you. Thank you.
The value of this is, of course, a contractor would not have been able to do that. So the value of having our own team here is extremely important.
Yeah. So.
And the bills are better?
The bills will be a lot better. So the biggest value of our team is, So they are every bit as talented as any contractor that we could buy. In fact, a lot of them come from contractors who have worked on Metro Parks projects before. The huge value is they are engaged, they're committed, they're extremely talented, and they want to do a good job for the Metro Parks. They want to do a good job for the patrons of the Metro Parks, and they bring, it's so fun to get into these projects because, like Zach Albright on this water line, he was so instrumental in coming up with all these new ideas and these new things to try. And we had failures along the way, like that mule tape broke, the string broke, there was a 90-degree bend in the middle of the line that we didn't know why.
Oh my God.
There were things that we encountered that I didn't highlight, but that did not deter our guys at all. And they knew that, yeah, if we really had to, we could pay somebody to drill it, but that's not the right thing to do. We have the ability to do this, we just have to sit down and figure it out. And I think ultimately, like these guys are all, they're included in all these big grandiose projects, and they are very, thankful to be included in all this. But this type of stuff right here, this is what really gets them churning. This is what they sit down in the morning, and they come with these ideas. And I know that these ideas didn't develop these ideas when they clocked in. They developed these ideas last night on their way home, and they thought about this all night, and they come with these new ideas. So it's really fun to watch them and how engaged they get and how into it they get and how committed they are to the whole process. So they stuff like this, they're very, very proud to be able to problem solve stuff like this because it's just so unique and it's so different. So
very cool.
Well done. Great thank job. You.
I can only say thank you to that crew. You know, the hours in the woods they spend. And I don't know if anybody noticed, but Commissioner Itu gave Sean McDermott a little bit of a hard time. Just wanted to duly note that. We have one more info item. We have the 2024 year in review. Not that that wasn't a year in review, but that was a very unique year in the review of our trades teams. And again, they're just so valuable.
It was. That's going to be hard to top. but traditionally, we always look back and reflect on the year that was and put together a video with some of the highlights and accomplishments of the team. There's so many more. But we put this video together for you, again, looking over the past year with all the preservation of our natural resources, the restoration work that came together of Garfield Park over several years, Astorhurst Disc Golf Course. So, gaining more access for the community, enhancing the experiences, and also a look ahead as well. So we put together this video. I do want to recognize the internal team that works hard on this, not only all the contributions, but our video production team, Eric Hewitt, Tim Long, and also the writing of Jeff Tolman. So with that, let's kick off the video.
...2024 was a tremendous year across Cleveland Metro Parks as the 107-year-old Park District celebrated major achievements from its second century of stewardship plan and continued its priorities of protecting nature, connecting communities, and inspiring conservation of our world. Strategic efforts helped preserve natural resources, improve park access, and create a more sustainable and healthier region, including the completion of the multi-year restoration work at Garfield Park Reservation. Major partnerships, grants, and generous donations helped improve connections to nature for all, elevate the guest experience, and laid the groundwork for dynamic opportunities to invest in Cleveland's East Side and create a more equitable and connected Emerald Necklace. Cleveland Metro Parks continue to innovate to reach hundreds of thousands of people of all ages through education and recreation programs and events. Cleveland Metro Parks golf courses, including the addition of Ironwood Golf Course in Hinckley, continue to draw record play and recognition. It was a tremendous year at Cleveland Metro Park Zoo. From the arrival and integration of baby Jamila and several iconic species to new adventures and the return of popular community events. The zoo also set the stage for its sesquicentennial, breaking ground on the primate forest, which will expand and enhance the historic rainforest. Support and service from within the organization, including Cleveland Metro Parks Police and Volunteer Services, help to protect and extend Cleveland Metro Parks' impact and legacy. Cleveland Metro Parks and its employees were recognized throughout the year for continued excellence in parks and recreation management, as well as several national, regional, and local awards.
As we close out 2024, we have so many things to be thankful for. First and foremost, the amazing leadership of our probate judge, Anthony J. Russo, and our Board of Park Commissioners. Their amazing leadership has taken Cleveland Metro Parks to new strides and raised the bar every single day. And to our amazing staff, it goes without saying, they are the backbone of everything that we do here at Cleveland Metro Parks. Service before self goes a long way in saying what we do for the community each and every day. As we close out 2024, I can't help but look forward to an amazing 2025 on the horizon. Thank you for everything you do each and every day.
What a year.
What a year is right.
Well done.
Thank you. There's no more no more items. There's no old business. The next regular scheduled meeting is in January 16th of 2025, and there is an executive session.
Is there a motion to go into executive session for the purpose of discussing personnel matters, specifically employment?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
No, roll call.
Dan Moore.
Yes.
Yvette Itu.
Yes.
Bruce Brinker.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right, back on the record. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.